Listen on Demand, brought to you by 680 News.
Hey, y'all, watching this on 680news.com. This is 680's music reporter, Rudy Blair. We're at Canadian Music Week, and usually throughout the week, there's always that one special person who's going to be speaking to the Canadian fans. This time, somebody you can probably call, a guitar god, but he's also an author, and he's a great musician. He is Slash. He is here with us. Slash, I got to say, man, thanks for doing this interview, man.
Wow, great. What a heavy introduction.
Well, it's the truth, man. You know, you got a lot of fans around the world. You've influenced a lot of people. You know, did you ever think that when you picked up that guitar for the first time and you're playing off of that one string, man, that these things would be happening to you? Your life would turn out the way it has.
I had no idea. I think the thing I had was, you know, sort of the fantasy of getting in front of an audience at some point. And that was basically it. I had no visions of all the rest of it that would come along with it. You know, the insanity and all that stuff as well. I had no idea what I was in for.
Well, you know, that vision has changed into something because April 6th, his debut album, Slash, is going to be coming out. Why was it now the right time to do your own album? Because this has got nothing to do with any bands that you've worked with in the past, not even your own band. This is just you, man.
Yeah, I think I just got to that point in my career where I needed to do something on my own. And that was basically it. I wanted to just sort of, you know, direct my own traffic, be sort of the ruler of my own domain or whatever that expression is, and just do it on my own and not have to answer to anybody. I think that was the main thing. And then I had this idea, you know, influenced by all the session work that I've done over the years, where I got people to come in and play on my record, and that's where all the singers came in. And and it was just, you know, it was really sort of cathartic for me, and it was very liberating, and I had a great time doing it, and it sort of helped me. You know, every so often you need to rediscover why you do what you do and why you love what you do, and it really did that for me.
Was this a challenge for you? Because when you talk about, you know, sessions, you talk about working with other people. I mean, you can't go opposites when you go Ozzy Osbourne on this album, then go to Fergie. I mean, that's a widespread there.
Right. You know, I wrote the music before I picked the singers, and so I sort of knew what song should go to who. So in other words, the Fergie song was something that I thought she would sound great doing. The Ozzy song was something that I thought he would sound great doing. And there's a lot of diversity in the music because I usually, in being in a band, get sort of pigeonholed into, that's just being in a rock group. You know, you get pigeonholed into doing sort of one-dimensional stuff. And so doing it on my own afforded me the ability to be able to do whatever I wanted. And then when you try to find the appropriate singer for any particular piece of music, you found that the different vocals that I needed were very diverse and made the record really interesting.
What song would you say really represented where you are right now and why?
Oh, that's a good question. That's hard to answer. I mean, I need the list of songs to really sort of sit there and look at it because it's so fresh. It's really, the whole record is really where I'm at this point. You know what I mean? Musically is something that I did in a short amount of time. It was basically over a period of a year was when I wrote all the songs and when I got all the singers on. So it's sort of a snapshot of what I was about during that period. And being that I'm just putting the record out now, I'm sort of still very attached to it as a collective.
So how do you think you have changed as a musician from Guns N' Roses to Velvet Revolver to today?
I think, you know, just trying to get better at it. I don't think I've really changed as a musician, but I've got a broader range of things that I'm capable of doing. I've had a lot of experience at this point. And so that all sort of, like, even if it's just subconscious, that all sort of gets applied to what you're doing now, you know. So I think I'm a more rounded player, you know, and songwriter at this point.
You know, you're known for, of course, the guitar riffs. When you were putting this album together, was that something important for you? Was that something that you thought about, you know what, fans need to hear something new? Or was it just about the songs itself that you felt needed to be out there?
I think it was a combination of things. It was, I wanted to be able to write some songs that were sort of unaffected by, you know, the band that I was in, just sort of like write these pieces of music on my own and not have any outside influence except for whoever was singing, you know, all these different people. And that was something I needed to do. And I also needed to record my guitar properly and be able to play the way that I feel like expressing myself. Because I think in Velvet Revolver, we were sort of like really sticking to a certain band dynamic. And I felt a little bit sort of, you know, not being able to express myself 100%. So I really needed this as an outlet to be able to sort of do my thing.
You know, folks are going to ask, though, Velvet Revolver, is there still a Velvet Revolver, or are you going to be on your own?
No. This is just, like I said, it's something that I needed to do for a minute, but I'm still in Velvet Revolver, and next year we're going to get together, regroup, and start looking for singers again. We just had a meeting last week and figured out the exact timeline that's going to happen.
Of all the artists who performed, and there are a lot of artists on this album, who surprised you the most and why?
Well, I mean, obviously the Fergie track is surprising because nobody's ever heard her sing rock and roll before, you know. The Adam Levine thing was very surprising because that was just sort of out of my regular sort of comfort zone, you know. Miles Kennedy was a huge revelation for me because I was like one of the few people that really didn't know about him, and he's just a phenomenal singer, so that was like a big discovery. Rocco De Luca, this guy that I actually didn't know, someone played me one of his records like while I was in the process of writing for this album, and I was looking for a particular style of voice and I wasn't sure where to get it, and then someone just played me this one record by him and I was like, that's exactly the voice that I need for this song I'm writing. So, you know, that was a surprise and sort of a discovery. And then the other thing is just getting to work side by side with some of these amazing people. Chris Cornell, who I'd never worked with before, is phenomenal. Watching them in action just to see how effortless it is for these guys to be so good. Ozzy Osbourne, Lemmy, it was a great, you know, having him come down and play on one of my songs was a huge honor for me. So I could go on and on. Every session had its own special thing to it.
So if you could have, though, anybody living or dead, if you could have had them record on this album, who would it have been and why?
Oh, I would have definitely wanted to do something with Billie Holiday, you know. That would have been so cool. Or, you know, or Janis Joplin, for that matter, would have been awesome. I would have loved to have had at least one song with Keith Moon and one song with John Bonham. And then I might have put the guitar down and just had Hendrix do a tune if I could possibly get him to do it. You know, and I suppose I could go on that list for a while.
Here, well, think about this, man, because Hendrix has just released a new album. You're going to be competing against that album, man.
I hadn't really looked at it that way. It's not really a comp. Yeah, well, his is out already.
Yeah.
Okay, so mine doesn't come out till next month.
It's still going to be competing, man.
Yeah, but anyway, I don't want to think about that too much.
Well, let me ask you this, though, and I want to go around it the right way. You know, the whole mystique that you've had to deal with for the last couple of years with Guns N' Roses, do you think that's ever going to be lifted? Do you think you're ever going to be able to just put that away and people just to say it's history, leave it where it should be?
That's funny. It's an interesting kind of there's certain aspects of it that I really love. The fact that there's such a huge fascination for a band that, at least when I was in it, you know, managed to garner so much attention and be such an iconic band for the people of that generation and all these generations that have come since then. That's great, and it's very flattering, and it really makes me feel proud that we accomplished what we did. So that's cool, and I'm not knocking anything having to do with that. The thing that is probably irritating about the sort of Guns N' Roses enigma is the desire that people have. And it's not unusual, but the desire for people to want to see it get back together. And the reality is that given where personalities are, I just don't see it necessarily happening. And, you know, and that's hard because I'm one of those people. I'm not adverse to going, yeah, man, that would be a great idea. It's not a bad idea. But it's not something that anybody in the group is actually working towards. So it can be very sort of disheartening to have to answer those questions all the time and always have sort of a negative response.
Well, I know you're going to have a positive response with this. Thomas DeBond, who is recording this for us right now, huge fan, was telling me just a couple of minutes ago, this is a guitar being released by you coming up. Talk a little bit about that.
I have actually sort of an homage to all the Guns N' Roses fans, old and new. Releasing a Les Paul, which is a replica of the guitar that I recorded Appetite for Destruction with. And it's a particular kind of Les Paul, and it's got particular hardware in it. And it's coming out April 1st. And that's a really cool guitar. And it's what I recorded this album with, this last record that I just did, and some of Velvet Revolver and a lot of User Illusions and all of Appetite for Destruction. So that was sort of like to give back to fans that have always been fascinated with that guitar sound. I'm also doing a Marshall amp based on the actual amp that I recorded with, too, that's going to be coming out a little bit later this year.
Fantastic. I know we got to wrap this up. Tour wise, what's going to happen with you, man? You're on your own for a while?
Yeah, we're gonna tour through into next year. And then I'm going to go back to Velvet. Miles is going to go back to Alter Bridge. So we're going to start doing shows in April, and then start the tour in June. And we'll do Europe, and then we'll do Japan and Australia, and then we'll be coming around and doing Canada and the U.S. in the fall.
You got some great memories, man. I was down at that that talk you were doing, and you have some crazy stories, man, about Canada and Toronto.
Oh, yeah. I have really great stuff about Toronto. Some of the most explicit things I ever did in my life are in this town. You know, God bless him.
Yeah, and of course, if you want to know more about it, read the book. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Slash, man, thank you so much for this interview. We got to make sure we do this again, all right, man?
All right, for sure.
And if you get an extra guitar, can you send it to Thomas?
Yeah, sure. I'll have that in the mail right away.
Thanks a lot, man. And folks, of course, make sure you check out all the other interviews on 680news.com. This is 680's music reporter, Rudy Blair, with Slash saying we'll see you on the flip side. Cool. How was that, man?